The following workshop was recorded at the 7th Annual Pittsburgh Classical Christian Education Conference. For more information about the conference, visit the Blackburn Study Center website at www.blackburnstudycenter.org.
My name is Jay Nykirk. I teach political science at Geneva College. Just to give you a little bit of background, can everybody hear me okay? As I say, I've never been accused of being hard to hear. Many people would prefer that they couldn't hear me is the normal pattern, but we'll see what happens. I'm also not used to people in the front row. This is this is very confusing to me. But I've taught at the college level for more years than I can count now, something over 25, largely in liberal arts and in greater or lesser degree faith-based institutions over the years. My wife, Ann, couldn't be here today. Some of you may know her. Father passed away unexpectedly in November while he and my mother-in-law were traveling in Greece, and they had had plans to go to St. Croix here in February, and so the children decided they should go keep my mother-in-law company. So it's a rough life, but my wife is in St. Croix now keeping her mother company. Somehow Geneva wasn't real excited about letting me off for a couple of weeks to go help her in that regard, but she's sorry she couldn't be here. Just to give you a little bit of background on where I'm coming from, and if any of you heard me when I spoke a couple of times ago, you may as well go to sleep because I don't know that I have a whole lot new to say, but we'll find out. But we started homeschooling when our children were going into 7th, 4th, and 1st grade, which was some number of years ago that I can't count because I barely remember how old they are at this point, but two of them are graduated from college. Wendy went to Wheaton as a music performance major and is finishing a master's at LSU now and applying to doctoral programs, having taken a perpetual vow of poverty on my behalf. Richard, our middle child, went to the Citadel as a civil engineering major and is now in the military. In fact, we just found out he's digging through the mud in the Philippines right now. And Daniel, our youngest, is a senior at Geneva, majoring in music education. So as the little brochure noted, we've sent students to, or youngins to, a number of different colleges in different fields and had some reasonably similar experiences, I guess. But as I understand it, there's two major issues that I'm to try to deal with today. Both of them surrounding this whole question of preparing students for college and helping to convince the college that your student is ready. And as you might guess, that's the big question for colleges. You know, how do we know that these students that haven't jumped through the normal hoops really are ready and aren't going to disappoint us? And that hit us very starkly with Wendy, who, as I noted, was going for music performance. And that was the big place where she was applying. And some of the schools, homeschoolers, didn't seem to bother them. Others, it just drove them absolutely nuts. They could not understand how to deal with it. One state school basically said, while she was fully qualified from a music standpoint, they would not accept her unless she either got a GED or completed a whole bunch of SAT-2 subject tests, the deadlines for which had all passed. And we said, she's going into music. Why does she need to prove she can do science? You know, she's not going to dissect rats in the French horn lab. And they said, well, she might change her major, and, you know, we don't want our professors, you know, saddled with some unprepared student. And literally that one went to the provost's office between the music faculty who wanted her and the admissions people who didn't want to mess with this. Now, that was 12 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. And my sense is some things have changed since then. I mean, at that point, we called Homeschool Legal Defense, and they said, well, we don't even think about college at this point. You know, we're still trying to deal with the high school issues. And I think a number of those kinds of things have changed. Please recognize as I go into this that what I'm reflecting are my particular experiences. I'm not telling you that this is the only way to do things, but it's how we did things, and at least in some measure seem to have worked. Let me begin, and I have a couple of handouts that I'll give you later, but I'd rather wait here. And again, I'm sorry that I'm going to have to dig through here in my lateness. Come on, where'd the handout go? Oops, that shouldn't have been on the tape, huh? Erase that from the tape. Don't fall. Now, you need to understand, for me, this is really high tech. When I use different color chalk, I think that's, you know, sort of the height of high tech. So we're already pushing the envelope here. Okay, there must be a focus thing on this somewhere. That's what we like. How about this? I wonder if we can get this even further away. Well, I apologize for the small type, but I promise to read it. What I thought I'd do first is talk about what I've styled after some popular culture thing, top 10 plus 1 issues for college students who have been homeschooled or have gone to a small school setting. And recognize as I talk about these, some of them apply to all students. Maybe all of them apply to all students. Some of them maybe apply in a little stronger measure to homeschooled students, and maybe especially good homeschooled students. And again, I apologize for the small type here. But let me just say a little bit about these by way of things you might want to think about as you're preparing your student to come be tortured by someone like me. First, and in some sense, these are in increasing importance, although we could fight about some of the numbers. But why am I going to college? It's amazing how often students really couldn't answer that question. If I really put it to most of my students, I'm not just talking about homeschooled students here. Why am I going to college? Am I going to serve time? You know, my parents said I have to go to college, so okay, I'll guess I'll go. Those kinds of students usually aren't terribly successful. Am I going for vocational education? And I say that as one who teaches in a more or less liberal artsy discipline and whose children in the main pursued what we might think of as more vocationally oriented, if you will, education. But, you know, if we're just going to get credentialed, what are the implications of that? And what kind of school should we attend? Or am I going to live out some kind of a calling? One of the things that most drives me nuts about students is when they say, well, the most important things I learn in college, I learn outside the classroom. So then why are you here? You know, why are you expecting your parents to pay all this money so you can go to camp whatever? Right? If you don't need the classroom, that's great. There's lots of learning you can do outside the classroom, but that's probably not then your parents' best investment when junior toddles off to college. And one of the things I really stress, and certainly it's something Geneva thinks about a great deal, but it's not unique to Geneva, is if God's called you to be in college, then that's your vocation for that period of time. That's what you're called to. That's what you need to focus on. And students need to think about that going in and to think about what kind of a school is going to work well for them, given the reasons they're going to college, what they see that as being for, what they hope to get out of it, etc. A second thing. The syllabus counts, so does the catalog, and they might change. More and more schools, like Geneva, are putting little statements in the catalog saying, this is not a contract. Do not sue us when it changes. But having said that, there are requirements. And for many students, and maybe it's particularly for homeschooled students who have been able to pursue in different directions and indulge intellectual curiosity and in the best sense of that idea, the sense that there may be a set of requirements and you've got to take them, whether you like them or not, is not necessarily a happy thought. And periodically the students will come in and say, well, I don't really want to take this. Can't I take this instead? And the answer is usually no. If it's a required course, for better or for worse, it's probably a required course for a reason. Can I substitute this assignment for that assignment? No, but I could always do it at home. Well, I'm sorry, but I can't do 30 different assignments for 30 different kinds of students. And putting students who maybe haven't been used to that kind of setting, because often that's exactly what we try to avoid in homeschooling, is to give that kind of flexibility. But the reality is, in many colleges, that's not going to be the case. And students need to recognize that there's some level of things that they're stuck with in syllabus requirements, in catalog requirements, and they may need to live with them even when they change. Managing freedom, or there ain't no hound dog. It was late at night when I typed this, and I think I had just seen a commercial about a dog, you know, a hound dog going and looking for a student or something. And the reality is, not going to happen at most colleges. And this is not one unique to homeschoolers. Nobody's going to get you up in the morning. Many times your roommate who doesn't have an 8 o'clock class is going to encourage you not to get up. They don't want to wake up then. Now, at schools like Geneva, and there's a number of others, if students are missing classes, sometimes there's a residence life staffer that will take an interest in them, try to track them down, etc. But the question of the students recognizing they've got to set their own alarm, they've got to get themselves up, they've got to make sure they eat right. They've got to think about how to get to class, how to use time well. Are important issues, not just for homeschoolers, but for students generally heading off for college. And one of the things that, you know, we tried to work through is, as our children were getting into high school, and did it, I think, with mixed success perhaps, is, okay, how do we prepare students to deal with that kind of new freedom? Now, if they go from they've been awakened every day to all of a sudden you're on your own, that's culture shock for them. And what kinds of things can we do to build in some measure, that kind of freedom for them? I guess the sun is not helping the overhead here too much, is it? Oh, well. Trust me, this is what it says. Managing time. We've just mentioned this one. But a huge issue for college students. Maybe this is an expansion of number 8, but more than that. Not only how do you deal with getting up and getting to breakfast at the right time, and you can't just go to the dining hall whenever you feel like it, but how do you manage courses that are on different schedules? How do you deal with the fact that all your professors get together in a huddle and plan it so all your exams are on the same day? And I've got a group of students in rebellion now because several of them have me for 2 courses, and because I've got to be away at the end of next week, their exams are back-to-back. One of my colleagues is giving an exam that day, and you know they're just pulling their hair out. And, of course, the sympathetic professor I am, I'm saying, hey, you've had 6 weeks to be studying this stuff. You should be ready for it. Bring a bucket of ice to soak your hand, and away you go. But you know, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with semester-long assignments? This is one that we really can, you know, try and think about ways to build into homeschooling settings. How do you deal with assignments where here's the assignment, I'll see you in 6 weeks and it better be done? Students generally, and again, not unique to homeschoolers, are used to somebody checking up on them every few days. Have you done the next thing? Have you done the next thing? Have you done the next thing? I don't see students enough to be able to do that as much as I might like to. In some cases, I'd rather not. But as much as I might like to see the students that often and encourage them, there's a limit to how much of that I can do unless I'm going to go out in the quad and lasso them and drag them back to my office. So how do we help them think about, you've got to figure out how to manage your time. You've got to think about this Jagunda paper and how you're going to break it down into a series of steps. And again, a number of homeschoolers have done very well on that, but it's just a general thing that I'd encourage you to think about. And striking that proper balance between, can I call it the nerd and the socialite? There is a sense that at college that even a Prussian like me recognizes that there's some benefits to some of the social things properly understood that go on at college. How do you balance those things out? Somebody that's sitting in front of their computer all day does miss an important part of college, but somebody who tries to spend all their time socializing misses an even more important part. A big one, I think, particularly for homeschoolers, living with lectures. Are we still more or less on the screen there? Living with lectures. Whether we like it or not, lectures remain a predominant mode of instruction at the college level. Sometimes with PowerPoint, which generally drives me nuts. I think we often end up with the students focusing on the trees rather than the forest. But nonetheless, an awful lot of what goes on in college, perhaps particularly at the freshman and sophomore level, is lectures. And that's the one thing homeschoolers almost never get. You know, rarely do we sit our student down and say, okay, I'm going to lecture you for an hour, unless they've been bad, then we might. But, you know, in terms of content material, we almost never do something like that. And so for many homeschoolers, the question of how do I deal with it when this clown's up there talking to me for 55 minutes and what am I supposed to remember and everybody else is writing like a crazed little dictaphone and what am I supposed to do here is a real serious issue. And one of the things that we started to think about as we realized that was, okay, what are we going to do to help our children prepare for that? One of the things we did was encourage them to take notes on sermons. So they at least started thinking about, okay, I've got to be able to listen to somebody, get the main points down, do that while I'm listening, think about major points, how it's supported, what point's trying to be made, avoid doodling. Early college courses are good ways of doing that. Maybe this is one of those times that we sometimes just need to sit down with our students and say, yep, you're going to learn how to listen to a lecture, so fasten your seatbelts, so I'm going to lecture for a while, and you know, get them used to thinking in those kinds of terms. Perhaps finding a student who's done reasonably well in college and see if you can borrow their notes to give a framework to your child is probably a good idea. But to do something to prepare them for that, because I think that really is one of the big culture shocks. Working and playing well with others, even when they don't agree with you. This is a big one for everybody. This isn't just a homeschool thing, but working and playing well with others, even when they don't agree with you. I don't buy, as you might guess from what's happened with my children, the argument that homeschoolers are social morons. But you'd be amazed at how often you hear that. One of my majors a few years ago told me he could spot a homeschooler a mile off. They were just that weird. The interesting thing was at the end of the semester, he found out that his roommate had been homeschooled and he had not figured it out the whole semester. I thought it was great. Whatever the other virtues and vices of my youngest, social moron isn't one of them. There might be other things, but that's not one of them. Nonetheless, one of the things that maybe many students struggle with, and sometimes it's an issue for homeschoolers, is how do you deal with diverse opinions where you don't, on the one hand, say, I'm right, you're wrong, shut up, and on the other hand, you don't say, well, everybody's right, we're done, let's go home. Okay? How do we deal with those different kinds of settings? Is that child prepared to say, here's what I believe, I know what I believe, and I know how to defend it winsomely? That's the key point, right? It's perfectly fine to hear other points of view. It's perfectly fine to disagree. How do we do it? What is the answer that I'm prepared to give, to quote Peter? Do they recognize differences between preferences and principle? In terms of dealing with things. How do they deal with a roommate that's a slob if they're a neat freak? How do they balance those kinds of situations? And again, finding ways to help our students think through those things, I think, is an important issue. A really big one for homeschoolers, and one that's just going to show up so well here, classroom etiquette. Is your homeschooler used to raising his or her hand when they have a question? Mine weren't, right? When they had a question, they came and said, Dad, I've got a question. And usually I was grading papers or something. I was thrilled to be interrupted. Okay? Not going to happen in the classroom. You know, when I've got a group of 40 students and I'm trying to get a point of constitutional law across to them, them just starting to talk in the middle of it isn't going to work well. And, you know, the idea that I may have to actually raise my hand and get called on, that I may not want to be interrupted at a certain point. I might want to finish a point that I'm making. I might want to hear from some other people occasionally. That can be a really difficult issue for students who are used to either doing self-learning or learning in very small settings. And so finding ways to help our students think about that. This is one of the real advantages, I think, of at least go visit some colleges and sit in on some classes. And don't go sit in on seminar classes. Sit in on freshman classes. See what it's like and how students are going to respond to that. I struggled all of last semester, with all due respect, with a homeschooled student. He was generally a very good student, but he drove me nuts in class because he wanted to say something about everything, and I just didn't have time. And the other students started to get frustrated, and that's probably where some of the social moron stuff comes from. And so just helping students think about the implications that we're going to do learning in a somewhat different way in a relatively large lecture setting, even if that's only 20, that's relatively large compared to one-on-one, two-on-one, from a lot of the independent learning we've been doing. One that I think homeschoolers generally do fairly well on, but I'll note it anyway, is writing counts, and sometimes so does speaking. Whether we like it or not, a big chunk of how our students are going to be evaluated in college is going to be on a relatively small number of writing things. And the ability to put your points down and to do it under some time limits, and I'll say some more about that in just a minute, is a pretty important issue. The ability to get to a main point quickly, figure out how to support it, not be compulsive about, did I say everything brilliantly? Because if I'm on a time test, I don't have time to be brilliant. I have time to say what I need to say and move on. But developing that argument, good style, grammar usage, all of those kinds of things is tremendously important. And again, what we found sometimes was our children, who were generally good students and were good students in college, but it was very easy for them to say, oh, I don't need to write this. Can't I just tell you what I know? Well, no, you can't. You know, as much as I didn't want to take the time to read it either, in some senses, you know, recognizing that need to be able to communicate what they know in written form is a really important one. And then there's this happy one. There will be exams. I wonder how many homeschooled families, and I know the practice is all over the mat, do some formal exams sometimes. It is a really difficult thing for students to pick up on, to learn how to take exams. And again, I don't know that that's particularly unique to homeschoolers, and that may depend on how you've approached all of that. But the question of recognizing, for example, there are time limits. And I one of the things that Geneva does, for better or for worse, and it goes way back in their history, and some of the students definitely think it's for the worse, I know that, but Geneva requires a political science course of every single student. And right now, I'm the only game in town for that course. So sooner or later, all of them get a shotgun put to their head and are dragged kicking and screaming into my presence, and they suffer for a semester. But that means I've got 120 of them on average each semester just in the different sections of that required course. If they can all write for as long as they want, I'm going to get their stuff graded by about the 12th of never. It's self-survival, if nothing else, for me to be able to say, here's a time limit, and I'm sorry, but at the end of that time, you need to be finished. You need to get to the point and not recognize that you can sit there and stare at one question that you've forgotten for 20 minutes and then say, oh, well, I couldn't remember that, so I'll take 20 more minutes at the end. It's not going to work that way. And sooner or later, students have to think about, how do I take exams under time pressure? How do I deal with different kinds of exams? How do I prepare for different kinds of exams? Do I study differently for a multiple choice exam than I do for an essay exam? How do I prepare for those kinds of things? How do I handle an exam? What do I do when I don't know the answer to a question? Taking the time to outline essays, for example, which students always say, but I didn't have time to outline. Now, look, recognize, when I was in high school, I wrote an essay on why I hate to outline. I understand the debate, but nonetheless, getting your points down in some coherent fashion is pretty important. And so I think there's some benefit to helping students think about those kinds of things through the high school years by way of preparation. The happy study skills question. And again, I think this is one where homeschoolers tend to do fairly well. Obviously, time management. But more than that, helping students recognize that different courses and different texts need to be studied differently. Why is social science statistics so popular? A, students are in political science, and sociology because they're desperately trying to avoid math anyway. Otherwise, they'd be business majors or engineers and go earn their fortune. I understand that. But the other side is we tend to try to read statistics books like political science books, right? In political science books, I'm looking for what's a major point. I want to think about evidence, but I'm not trying to make sure I follow every single step necessarily. That's not going to work in studying statistics, where I better sit down and understand exactly where did this come from, think about how to work through examples, etc. And I think very often students have a very difficult time figuring out how they go back and forth between different kinds of texts and different kinds of courses and different kinds of study skills, particularly because we probably gravitate to the kind we enjoy more or do better at. And so helping them think through those kinds of things is pretty important. And I would say the number one issue for homeschoolers, deadlines. Ah, Dad, I can't quite get this done today. How about we play a game of backgammon and I'll finish it tomorrow? Well, okay. Right? I mean, it was very easy for me to say, oh, poor little whomever, and, you know, for them to wrap me around their little finger. And look, one of the virtues of homeschooling is that we can go at the student's pace, be it fast or be it slow. But if you're in a class with 40 others, sorry. That's not what most colleges are going to be able to accommodate. And we need to recognize that going in, that when there's a deadline for a paper, you need to get it done or the professor's not going to be a happy camper and may not accept it. And for many homeschoolers, that's a real rude awakening. And I'm not sure what the best way to deal with it is. We struggled all over the place with, you know, what's the best way to enforce those kinds of things. Sometimes I just had to toddle off to college and learn the hard way. But I would encourage you to think about those kinds of issues. So from the standpoint of what are the kinds of things that I see as a professor, what are some things that I think we could help students with in terms of preparing them, those are some things I'd put before you to at least think about how you might build some of them into the particular homeschooling that you're doing. And sometimes people have been able to use co-ops and joint teaching and those kinds of things, early college very successfully to deal with some of them. But I think the more we recognize these kinds of things intentionally, the better prepared our students are going to be for dealing with mean people like me. Any questions at this point? Before we get on to some nuts and boltsy kinds of things. And I'm assuming one of you will throw something at me if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Oh, she'll throw something at me. I'm sure you can, but I think I have what I need. The other piece in the perpetual debate is how do we demonstrate that our students know something and are prepared for college? And I have two handouts here, and I'm going to put them up on the overhead, but especially given how well they work, the overhead is working. The handouts might be useful, I hope. Well, they differ somewhere. Seem to have lots more of one than the other. Well, that's because I didn't pay attention to what I was looking for. Let's try those as one and those as one. Thank you. A little bit of background while these are coming around. And what's coming around here is a sample of the kind of transcript we used as well as a sample of a letter. And I more or less sort of a little bit got my youngins' permission to use some things from them. But I fictionalized things a little bit too. I just am not creative enough to start from square one. And we'll come back and talk about what we did in just a minute. But let me share some experiences. And again, especially on this part, please recognize I'm telling you one way that one family did things. I'm not telling you that all this came down from Mount Sinai with Moses and you better do it this way. When we started homeschooling, we actually started using material from Calvert and used their advisory teaching service because we thought it might be a good thing for our children to hear another perspective, particularly our oldest, who was not real keen on being homeschooled. She's actually probably the one who is most positive about it now, but at that point, going into seventh grade, this was not a happy thought for her. And the big thing we heard was, I'll never go to a snowball dance. And my response was, good, that's part of the idea. But that probably didn't help the situation at that point. But we used that and for a while just to get that extra feedback. And with her also, we thought we'd use one of the formal diploma programs. And I think there were some benefits to those in terms of accountability and all of that. But very honestly, the thing we found was the colleges who were okay with homeschoolers didn't really care whether you had gone through the formal diploma program. And the ones who weren't comfortable with homeschoolers, the formal diploma program wasn't going to satisfy them anyway. I mean, we hauled all this out to Indiana University out in Bloomington. And they basically said, we don't care if they can't, if this diploma program can't show that they were accredited by Middle States, we're not taking it. Well, nobody's accredited by Middle States at that level. Give me a break. And I understand some unique things that were going on there at some level. And I think, frankly, they just didn't want to be bothered by homeschoolers. And if you don't, you can find ways around that. So with the boys, we didn't go that route at all. For better or for worse, we found that the things that we put together seemed to satisfy people. One of the things that we did was tried to do an achievement test every year, whether they were required or not. We thought that that would provide us with some useful benchmarking and also help the youngins get used to taking the standardized tests that, whether we like it or not, are fairly important in terms of how colleges look at things. And it turned out to be a good thing. One of the things we found with our youngest, and I don't know where he gets these competitive genes, it must be from his mother, he would race his friends to see who could get done first. The quality of the work being irrelevant, the question was who turned their thing in first. And, being able to deal with him over a couple of years, my wife was sort of able to break him of that, I guess. But the other reason I think that's important is, as I've noted, standardized tests, whether we like it or not, are fairly important for many colleges. And sometimes parents at all levels don't really recognize that. For example, who cares about the PSAT? It's just practice, right? Well, now it's a lot more than that. An awful lot of financial award has as its first cut how the student does on the PSAT. And if you just see it as a practice round, then we can do it or not do it, see what happens. Not a particularly good idea. A second thing to be aware of is the trend seems to be, and I say this, I don't work in admissions, although I do some administrative and budget work at Geneva, and so I know a little bit about this. More and more schools are changing their awarding patterns for financial aid, that they seem to be moving away from quote-unquote need-based aid and moving more and more toward quote-unquote merit-based aid, because we're all going to be in the top 10% for having the best students and most selectivity, et cetera. It's sort of like Lake Wobegon. But because of that, how you do on test scores starts to be real important in determining all of those things. And I hate to put that kind of pressure on. And again, one of the reasons many of us homeschooled is we didn't want that kind of pressure on tests. But it's a cold, cruel financial reality that I can't change, that how you do on those things is important. The SAT 2 and AP tests, talk to colleges that you're interested in. Different colleges handle them differently. Sometimes students can get a fair amount of advanced credit by doing AP tests and getting a decent score on them. But there are pros and cons to that. I find, for example, that students who come in, even if they get a 5 on the AP exam in American government, just because of the unique things that happen in any introductory course, not because of me particularly, miss something when we then exempt them from the introductory American government course. There's things of necessity that just aren't going to be covered in an AP course that we cover. And sometimes they struggle to catch up, but those can be fairly useful. On to the transcripts. Presumably all of you have them, and I'll toss it up on the overhead, but you're probably going to be better off taking a look at what you did there. This was the way see how I can manage to get this backwards and upside down. And this is the way we put together the transcripts for our youngins. And again, I changed some of the grades. I think on yours, except for the last year, I put X's. so it didn't look like I was giving you the child's real transcript. But basically, we just worked off of each of the courses we taught, we treated as one unit, with the exception of some of the smaller things, like whatever we were doing for phys ed or music, those kinds of things. And then at the end of every year, I would sit down and hope to reconcile to what the evaluator said was the number of units the student got credit for. Actually, that's a little over-optimistic because procrastinator that I am, I tended to put these together only when they needed them. So I was going back trying to reconcile 3 years' worth because I hadn't, I mean, I had a pretty good idea where the grades were coming from. But I adopted this because it seemed to generally reflect the direction that most colleges were used to seeing from high schools. There are lots of colleges that are willing to deal without transcripts under certain circumstances. There's ways around it. I recognize that. But this is what we did and found reasonably successful. But then I did want to try to help the people understand what we had done. And so on the back, I included a number of notes there about where the grades came from, about why I thought they were reasonable, and then various symbols to help the person looking at the course understand how they fit into the home education, which courses were taken at Geneva, which were taken at Westminster, which were lab courses, what were essentially AP courses, although we didn't have the children take the exams for them, how we handle courses that went across each semester, et cetera. And generally, as far as I could tell, the colleges that looked at this were reasonably satisfied. They didn't have anybody say, we don't believe your grades. And the children's SAT scores, and those are fictional down there, by the way. Don't sell them on the internet for my kids. They're fictional. I made them up, as you might guess from what they total to. But the schools seemed to generally be willing to accept them if they were willing to think about homeschoolers generally. They were willing to accept them fairly reasonably. In fact, interestingly, for Richard, the only real question that, for example, the Citadel raised with his transcript was, of course, he took at Geneva that they couldn't figure out how to transfer. They didn't raise anything about any of the homeschool things. It was from another accredited college that they said, well, we don't know what to do with this course, and he was sort of distressed when they wouldn't transfer it in, although I think now looking back, he's glad he took it. But this seemed to work fairly well. We could reconcile it to what the evaluator was doing. The colleges seemed to be fairly comfortable with the fact that they could then compare to, you know, sort of Joe and Jane average high school student and worked fairly well. In the main, I just worked off A was 4, A minus was 3.7, B plus was 3.3, calculated the average, and away we went.
So you didn't necessarily...
Yes, and in fact, often, yes. And I would try to tie back to it, but the evaluator in many cases was trying to compare to state standards, which wasn't necessarily where we were heading. And I didn't find any great problem with that. In fact, I don't think any college said, show me the report from the evaluator that says, you know, that underpins this. And I didn't show this to the school district. So really, there was probably no high muckety-muck whoever compared what the evaluator did to this. It seems to have been purely a matter of our integrity, and I hope there's something for that. But there were some small changes there, in particular with how the evaluator is trying to deal with music and phys ed and health and safety and those kinds of things. Those were the real things that were a little confusing at that point. So this isn't horrendously far off, and I think in most cases the totals were pretty close to what the evaluator did. But sometimes the specifics were a little bit different. And again, as I say, the colleges seem fairly comfortable with this. As I've talked to Geneva's admissions people, they seem relatively comfortable with this. The one other big problem we had with it was when Richard went for one of his interviews with the Naval Academy Selection Committee. And he came out afterwards sort of shaking his head, and he said, Dad, they looked at my transcript, and they couldn't figure out what all these asterisks and ampersands and everything else was. And I finally had to tell them, turn the page over, and they're all listed there, you know, to explain what's going on. So, and they had had it in advance, so that didn't give me a whole lot of confidence. But nonetheless.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anything for us, so it's all a matter of integrity. But like for physical education and support, did you actually keep did you have a specific course that you followed through the year that you?
No.
Well,
no. And I think it's noted on the transcript. Maybe I didn't talk about the phys ed. I talked about the music there. But maybe we didn't have anything on the phys ed one here. In terms of the phys ed, some of it was just I like to go out and play games with them anyway, and I figured that was. But they generally played some sort of organized sport. They were all in the local marching band. And usually we listed those kinds of things. In fact, I'll go one step further. Go ahead. Yeah, although there we did work with other homeschoolers to do some of the formal things that the state required. I mean, every year or so, my wife would get a group together and they'd get down to the firehouse and my son would learn new ways to try to burn the house down. And, so we did do some formal things there and those were provided to the evaluator, but we didn't try to put them on the transcript. And again, I tried in the main for the half credit kinds of things to reflect what seemed to be the standard in many of the schools. You know, many of the high schools, phys ed is not a full credit. Band sometimes is, sometimes isn't. And I sort of tried to just reflect that. The other thing that we did was accompany the transcript with a list of things that they had done to reflect some of these. And here I couldn't get fictional, so I didn't do a handout. So I'm sorry, you'll just have to squint. But I couldn't convince my son to let me do handouts on all of these. But we tried to list various of their academic accomplishments, things that reflected that, nominations to the Naval Academy, Johns Hopkins program, Certificate of Merit, the athletic things they did. Richard played ice hockey, things they did with band. Our children went to the local high school for band and chorus, and the high school let them participate in musicals. And so they were able to do the district and region band kinds of things, and then community activities and work history to try to demonstrate some of the things they were doing in support of the transcript, and partly to get to exactly Claire's question, about, okay, if somebody says, well, show us you really did phys ed, we can at least say, hey, the kid was out till all hours of the night playing ice hockey because you can only get ice hockey time at some horrible hour of the morning or horrible hour of the evening in regard to all that. This is Daniel's. We didn't put the fancy heading on this one, or at least I couldn't find it in the computer. But again, a list of the musical things he did, which were particularly important for him applying for music programs and, when they made region band and state chorus and all that stuff. And then particular academic things that they had done and community and sports kinds of things. And for him, you can see some different interests. He had stopped playing baseball by this time, but he was into swing dancing and skiing and mountain biking, and I figured if he could do all those things, I'm happy with his phys ed skills. He trotted off to Geneva and started playing rugby, for crying out loud. So, and again, you can see some of the things that we tried to build in to also get some of the other experiences that I was talking about earlier. A couple of other things quickly. The letter of recommendation, I think I got my daughter's permission to give you the one letter. And ironically, it's one I wrote to Indiana University. I write lots of letters of recommendation. It is far from my favorite part of the job as a college professor. And one of the things I've found is that letters of recommendation are like grades. There's huge letter of recommendation inflation. So trying to figure out how you say things about your child without sounding like, I'm the parent and my little angel can do no wrong, is an interesting challenge. And for whatever it's worth, that's how I handle it. I actually make it a practice in letters of recommendation to point to something where the student needs to improve. I'm not willing to grant that anyone's perfect, least of all me. And so anytime I write a letter, I try to, A, show some area where I think the student can improve, and B, the more specific you can be, the better it is. Can you point to some specific ideas, specific things the child has done that demonstrate that they're the most gifted writer since Hemingway and the greatest mathematician since Einstein or whatever else you're saying about them? You know, the more you can show some specifics to support that, the better, especially if you can do that and keep it to one page, which for me is a major challenge. So, you know, I'd appreciate if you treated all of these things with a little bit of discretion. Please don't publish them on the internet, etc. But you're welcome to take them to the extent that they're helpful to you, is at least how one family handled some of these things. Two other things that I would note that in closing here that I think are particular issues for homeschoolers, and we'll eliminate the hum here for a while. One is, I've already mentioned the financial aid question. Thank you. Here, I thought it was my eyes going bad, but it was the lights were off, huh? The financial aid question. It's a cold, cruel reality. Colleges are getting expensive. And there's really only three ways to get around it. One is, earn lots of money so you can pay. And as colleges, we like those kind. The second one is merit scholarships of various kinds, be they institution-based or extra-institution-based. And the third is some sort of need-based scholarship. One of the questions that I think any family has to deal with, and probably you've thought some about it if you're homeschooling, is, are you willing to take government money? A big chunk of student aid today is government money in the form of grants or loans. What's your family's philosophy about loans? What's your family's philosophy about taking money from the government for education? And the time to confront that isn't when the first bill shows up. I promise you. I really was getting worried about my eyes there for a minute. Almost every institution, many institutions, and there are some exceptions, require, if you want any aid from the government or from the institution, that you fill out the federal student aid form, the FAFSA form. I hated it. I rebelled against it. I yelled. I mean, you know, with Daniel, part of my benefits is tuition remission. I said, why do I have to fill this out? Well, the answer is because the college still might be able to get some money from the government if I fill it out. It is a pain in the neck to fill out. You got to have tax forms and everything else. So leave yourself time to do it and recognize that you may have to do it every year. And the problem is they generally send that stuff to the student who doesn't bother to send it to you, who is the one who needs to fill it out. So the wise parent asks their child, have you gotten your FAFSA form yet? If so, don't you think it would be good to send it home? Or have you suddenly inherited lots of money I don't know about? But that's a real issue. And looking around for other scholarships is certainly an important thing. You know, the Rotary and, you know, left-handed, red-headed people, et cetera. There's all kinds of scholarships floating around, and I'd encourage you to think about it. But the big piece of advice is the FAFSA form. Every year I just figured, I don't need to do this. And every year I was wrong. And, well, I finally did get out of it with Geneva. But generally a pain in the neck. And be sure you find out things like, if your child gets aid, is it renewable automatically? Is it tied to a particular grade point average? And in many colleges, that grade point average is firm. If they say 3.0, a 2.99 will not get it done. I don't like that kind of pressure on students, frankly. But it is a reality. And make sure you understand that. I think it was Wendy had a scholarship that we thought was good for 4 years and the college thought was good for 1 year. And that made an interesting problem the next year. So make sure you look at those and know for sure where that aid's coming from, what the conditions are, how long it's good for, et cetera. One final point, and I'm hoping that clock is right. I've got 2 minutes. I can make it. I can make it, Mom. And this is just a major league issue for every college and for every one of you. And that's the nature of federal legislation on privacy laws. It is a cold, cruel reality that the federal government has adopted a number of laws that dramatically limit what colleges can legally tell parents about their child. And for a school like Geneva, we hate it. Well, we hate most of it. Theoretically, if your child is still under 21 and the big test is your child classified as a dependent? If your child is still a dependent, the college can legally give you information under certain circumstances about your child. But trying to figure that out from the college's standpoint is really difficult because that law for dependency and student aid law for dependency aren't the same. And trying to track which one is, which one isn't, if the parents aren't together, which is the legal parent, or are they both, or how do you handle that, is a huge issue. And most colleges respond by saying, we just won't give the information out. What a number of us have tried to do is provide a form for students to fill out saying, I give my consent for this information to be released to my parents. And we assume if the parents can't convince the child to fill the form out, there's probably a good reason for us not to provide the information. But find that out wherever you go. What's their policy on disclosing? Because we have lots of parents who, and we want to support families. But I want to support my family, and I'd like not to be sued, thank you very much. So find out what the policy is, and also recognize that under the law, only certain people in the institution may give out information. It is technically not legal for me as an individual professor, even if the college has the right to disclose on this child under the law. It is not legal for me as an individual professor to do it. There are designated reporters at each institution. Now, that doesn't mean that I might not try to bend that sometimes. But please understand why it is when a professor may not be willing to talk to you about your child. You know, and says you may have to contact the registrar, you may have to contact the academic dean because they're the official reporters. It's not because we're anti-family, it's just the nature of the federal privacy laws in recent years and where lawsuits have gone and our desire to not end up destitute. But that is a real rude awakening for an awful lot of parents who expect that they can just call up and find out, is my child coming to class? And legally, I'm not supposed to answer that question, as I understand it. So I'll wink and nod and tap dance around it. But wherever your child thinks of going, please make sure you talk to the institution about those kinds of issues. Well, I started 2 minutes late. No, more than that, but that's okay. Again, I apologize for starting late. I'll be happy to try to deal with any questions at the end here. But thank you very much.